Jen.
Hey, Jeffrey.
You know, I was on iTunes yesterday, and I'm pissed.
Why are you pissed?
They deleted some of our stuff because it's, quote, too old.
It's because we produce so many episodes. Oh. They only keep a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I talked to Doug, I talked to Nada, and we are going to get some of those episodes back because they were classic.
Love it.
And we're going to set them out again so that our diehards can take advantage of that wisdom that seemingly is off the air, but it's not.
Well, let's do it right now, like with this episode.
Cool. Let's
go. All right. Take a listen.
I remember when I started out in my sales career, it took me so long to get to just being a good salesperson. But when you get to good, what do you do next? You get better in order to be the best. I have the perfect roadmap to get you from where you are to best, and it's called Good, Better, Best. Learn the 6 elements to mastering the secret of personal achievement and why you should shift your focus from making money to being the best in the world at what you do. Don't settle for being good. Don't even settle for getting better. Be the best with my free ebook. The link is in the show notes.
And it's a full body workout, or almost full body, in 7 minutes. And
wow.
It's only 30 seconds per exercise and then 10 seconds of rest.
I'm
12 exercises total.
Hitting that up tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I might even do that.
I have ADHD.
Can we get it down to 6? Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling, and welcome to Sell or Die. I'm joined today by...
Hi, everybody. I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in the New York Minute.
And we are slightly delayed from Jen because she is 500 miles away, well, 200 miles away, down at the beach on a writing retreat, which I think we should talk about this morning.
It felt like 500 miles and I was driving all the way here.
Exactly.
Yeah, what is a writing retreat?
A writing retreat is where you go and you shut the world out and you just write. Because you need concentration and fluidity of thought in order to be able to gain your stream of consciousness to write something that's meaningful. Writing requires depth, and writing requires an ability for you to just focus in and think about your experiences, your philosophies, your thought processes, and to get it down as fast as you possibly can because it's fleeting. Thoughts are fleeting.
Wow. How's it going, Jen?
For me, this week is all about eating healthfully, playing tennis every morning, and writing for 80% of the day. And so far, it's going really well.
Good. And the key for those of you who say, I want to write a book someday, but the first chapter is not written, what you want to be able to do is gather a bunch of thoughts first and have a kind of a basis from which to write, maybe create a table of contents, maybe... write 4 or 5 paragraphs about what you want to write about and begin to clarify that. And then when you get where you're going, figure out your best strategy for writing, because it may not be actually writing. It may be typing. It may be like I use word to text right now, but Jen is a typer.
Yeah, I enjoy typing. I do.
Yeah, I'm not good at keyboarding.
I wonder if our guest this week has ever done a writing retreat.
I'll bet you he has. He is an actual writer. His name is Hal Elrod. And for those of you who don't know of Hal, he has an incredible story of recovery and a credible story of resilience. And we'll be getting to him in just a couple of minutes. But tell me about your writing retreat so far, Jen.
Well, so far, I've taken a few walks on the beach. I brought our dog, Charlie. She's here with me, keeping me company. And I am writing away. I can see the beach from my window, but I mainly hold up in this room. It's a very nice little hotel room. And my book's going to be coming out. It's due to the publisher in June, and it's going to be coming out in bookstores early next year.
I'm going to issue you a challenge, Jen. Why don't you tweet your best lines that you write each day at the end of each day? Tweet 10 things that you totally love to do. maybe put them up on every form of social media that you've got. Maybe make your Instagram story about it or whatever, but get your best thoughts out there because they will inspire new thoughts.
Okay, I like it. I'm down. And you diehards listening, why don't you do that as well with me this week? Get your best thoughts out there to the world.
If you email them to us at sellordie@gittimer.com, sellordie@gittimer.com, we will read them in our next episode. I will be more than happy to acknowledge you as a leader and maybe send you a mug.
All right, so Jeffrey, tell everyone where we just got back from.
We just got back from the epicenter of the United States, Des Moines, Iowa. And it is the cultural capital of Iowa. There's more corn in Des Moines than there is in the rest of the world. But there's also more insurance companies in Des Moines than there is in the rest of the world. And there's more nice people in Des Moines than there is in the rest of the world. And we did a couple of public events at the Marriott West Des Moines. We're joined by hundreds of people, and it was a hootenanny. And we're going to have another one here
in
Charlotte. We're going to have another one.
That's your word today, Jeffrey.
Yeah, it's the word of the day. We are going to have another one here in Charlotte on June the 14th and 15th. So if you're in the neighborhood or you get near an airport, fly down. Take a look. We have a leadership seminar on June the 14th and a sales mastery seminar on the 15th. I would recommend you attend. Go to cgittimer.com/Charlotte. You'll see it in the notes. And let's rock the house.
That's right.
Jen, how did you feel about the one in Des Moines? How did you like it?
You know, the one in Des Moines was incredible. People walked away with so many useful strategies and things they could do differently after the seminar. And we did a Sell or Die Live, which was a lot of fun to answer people's questions and get them involved and on the stage. And we're going to be doing that in Charlotte and at the rest of the events as well.
We're going to be doing live podcasting on the stage both Thursday afternoon and Friday morning. And it'll just be short and sweet, but it will feature audience members. So if you would like to be memorialized on the internet forever and have your brand zoom to the top of Google, then you might want to show up.
Yeah, those Sell or Die Lives will be on the feed later this week.
For those of you who don't know, Hal Elrod is the host of the Achieve Your Goals podcast, creator of the Best Year Ever live event, and is the exclusive producer of the Miracle Morning movie. It's a documentary about his book, The Miracle Morning, and it features people like Robert Sharma, John Gray, John Lee Dumas, a bunch of people, Joe Polish, people that can make a difference in your life, and I highly recommend that you watch the movie. But more importantly, this person, Hal Elrod, has affected us personally. I have been reading more and writing more since our interview a bunch of days ago, almost 2 months ago, and this has been a person who can influence you as well. He's influenced our daughter. He's influenced me, and he's influenced Jen. Jen, what's happened to you since you listened to this interview?
So we recorded this interview with Hal about 55 days ago, and since then, I have been doing Miracle Morning, which you'll hear all about what it is. I've been doing it for the past 55 days. I missed one day in that time span, but that's pretty good. I thought, this seems cool. I'll give it a try. I'll try it for like a week or something. And now I crave it and I don't want to wake up and not do it. I want to wake up every morning and do the Miracle Morning because it is transformational and life-changing and has set my path in a different direction.
Well, now that we have set Hal Elrod on a cloud, I would like you to please help me welcome the great Hal Elrod.
I'm so grateful to be here. This is exciting. I've been looking forward to this.
How many talks do you are you giving in a year now?
I try to limit it to about two a month. I've got two young kids, an 8 and a 5-year-old. So just to not be on the road too much, two a month is kind of my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. And
it's enough time away from the family, but not too much time away.
Exactly. Just enough to feel good and then enough to feel guilty.
Yeah, exactly.
So are you boys or girls?
8-year-old daughter, Sophie, and 5-year-old son, Halston. So my first name is Hal. My middle name is Austin. And we just squished them together and made up a new name.
Wait, your middle name is Austin and you live in Austin?
It was destined, right? It was destined.
Oh, man. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. All right. So I want to get into your book, The Miracle Morning. But before we do, I think our diehards are dying to know about your death experience. A lot of people have a near-death experience, but aren't here to talk about their death experience.
Exactly.
Sure. No, and I'll just say up front, because this is the question I always get at some point, which is, did you see a light? Did you, did you hang out with God? Like, what happened?
Yeah, is God a woman?
Yeah, exactly. Of course she is.
I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, you have the 6-minute deal. You could easily come out with a book that's God's a woman, and people would have to at least give it some credence.
I know. I've wondered when I see books about people that had near-death experiences and they wrote what they saw. You know, I'm always wondering, like, how do you prove them right? Is it real? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
So in other words, you died on the table but didn't see shit, correct?
I don't remember. I what happened is I was hit head-on by a drunk driver at 70 miles an hour. And what happens when you're in a head-on collision, for anyone in a head-on collision, is your brain is traveling at 70 miles per hour when the car and your skull stops moving and your brain hits the front of your skull at 70 miles an hour and it crushes the front of your brain. And so I have no memory. Yeah, sorry to get graphic. I have no memory of the basically 2 weeks of my life. There's like roughly a week or two of my life from, about 10 minutes before the accident until a week or two after is just, I have nothing. I've got no memory. So yeah, whatever happened during that time, I don't know what it was.
It's probably better off not knowing or
remembering. So you didn't see any of the disciples or Jesus himself or any of that stuff, correct?
I did not. I do, though, what I took away from it, and I think that for anybody listening, I mean, there's a lot that I took away some in terms of lessons, but in terms of the experience, I go, I don't remember being dead for 6 minutes, but I came out of it with just a commitment to living a life of purpose where I went, okay, what is my mission in life? What can I do while I'm here that matters? And ever since then, my life has been dedicated. You know, I was 19, I'm 38 now. So it was half of my life ago. Or I guess I was 20. I always forget. I had just turned 20. But I look at, I've since then, I've dedicated my life to just how can I serve others? It started out speaking at high schools about drinking and driving because I was like the most natural fit. I was young, and when they went to colleges and then, eventually became a corporate keynote speaker. But so I was dead for 6 minutes, came out of the coma 6 days later, said I would never walk again. So the doctor said I'd probably never walk again. And the
doctors
thought
doctors
I was
make
in,
predictions like
I know.
That. Just,
I know. They're just, know. I guess that, it's kind of like that philosophy that says, lower your expectations so you can only be pleased with how life turns out. I guess maybe that's their strategy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, just tell him that he's never going to walk and life's going to be terrible. And then if it's not, well, hey, he's happy. It feels good.
How did you keep your attitude up during that time? I mean, this is crazy.
So it's one of my favorite questions, and I'm going to tell you a short anecdote, a true story of what kind of happened. So the doctors called my parents in after I was out of the coma for a week. I was in a coma for the first week after the accident, and again, I broke 11 bones, so my femur broke in half and it came out of the side of my leg. Graphic here, so you know what happened.
So
my pelvis was crushed between the center console and it broke 3 separate times. It was crushed between the door that a second car hit me in the door at 70 miles an hour because my car spun sideways and was vulnerable to the traffic that was coming behind me. And that was actually, most of my injuries weren't from the head on, except the brain damage. The majority of my broken bones were being hit in the door of my car at 70 miles an hour. So my arm broke, my leg broke, my elbow was shattered. I severed the nerve in my arm, shattered my eye socket, almost completely severed my ear. And so I was,
it sounds like Humpty Dumpty. Like they had to put you back together.
Back together.
Again.
Yeah. I know. I should be the bionic man. I should be able to lift cars and stuff. But so the doctors called my parents in and they said, we're concerned, or they said, we want to give you an update on Hal's condition. So again, this is a week after I came out of the coma and I was in a coma for a week. So we're talking 2 weeks after the night that all those, injuries happened. And they said, we're concerned that physically Hal has made it through the worst. He is now stable because I had flatlined 2 more times in the coma. So, it was just keeping me alive was the number one concern.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, physically he's on the road to recovery, but mentally and emotionally, we believe that he is in denial and or delusional. And they said this is common for accident victims, especially at a young age, where the prognosis is so grim, being told he's never going to walk again, you know, knowing that his body's going to have these horrific scars all over the left side, I mean, on his leg, his arm, his waist. Often people cannot handle this new reality, so they just check out. And they said, we believe that's what's happened to Hal. And he will have to face reality, and it will come crashing down, and he could turn to drugs, alcohol, suicide, or something very dangerous. So we want you to talk to him now, get him to open up and to make him feel safe to talk about the depression that he's hiding, or the anger, or the fear, or whatever it is, so we can help him begin healing emotionally. My dad comes in that night, tells me the doctor's prognosis, says, Hal, how are you really feeling? It's okay to talk about being depressed. You know, it's fun. We're here to support you. And I thought about it, because my dad's face was, you know, he was crying and he was really emotional. And I said, and here's the great lesson for everybody. I said, Dad, I thought you knew me better than that. I was in a car accident. I cannot change that. I cannot change that my bones are broken. And if I never walk again, that may be the reality that I can never change as well. However, since I can't change it, I'm not going to feel bad about it, because that doesn't serve me. And here's the way that I put it. I said, Dad, if I'm in a wheelchair, if the doctors are right and I'm in a wheelchair the rest of my life, I promise you I'll be the most grateful human being you've ever seen in a wheelchair. I'll be the happiest person you've ever seen in a wheelchair, because I'm in a wheelchair either way. And I could be miserable about my life, or I could be happy and grateful about my life, because I still have my life. And I said, wow. And for anybody listening, by the way, and for Jeffrey, for you, Jennifer, for you, I always ask, what's your wheelchair? What's the circumstance, either present, past, or maybe that you're anticipating in the future, that causes you emotional pain? And you have to realize that every negative emotion is self-created by our resistance to our reality. If I were to have gone, God, this isn't fair. I don't deserve this. I wish this didn't happen. How could this happen? That would have created that depression that the doctors were talking about. That's the normal response, but I don't want normal. I want good. I want healthy. I want productive. I want
proactive. Of course. Yeah, and happy.
And so all my energy, I told my dad, I said, look, I've accepted the worst case scenario, the wheelchair, but I'm not dwelling on it. I've accepted it, so it has no power over me emotionally. All of my energy now goes into what I want. I visualize walking every day. I think about it. I dwell on it. I pray about it. I imagine it. And if it doesn't happen, I've accepted that. But I'm not going to put my energy into what I don't want, into the fear. I've replaced the fear with the faith of what I want. And a week later, the doctors came in with routine x-rays, and this is how the story ends. They said, we don't know how to explain this. They sat down with me and my parents. They said, but your body is healing so quickly, we're going to let you take your first step tomorrow in therapy. So it went from never walking again to 3 weeks after I was found dead at the scene.
That's not a natural response for a 20-year-old.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I forgot to tell you where
that come from?
Yeah. So, and that's actually, I missed that part of the story. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, remember I live by the 5-minute rule that I learned in my, get ready for it, Cutco sales training.
Ooh, I did Cutco.
You did Cutco?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Jeffrey should have done Cutco.
We use Cutco. We use Cutco.
And Jeffrey, I think you wrote the foreword for our book of Cutco representatives called Cutting Edge Sales.
Yeah. we're good pals with John Rowland.
With John Rowland. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I said, Dad, remember the 5-minute rule that I learned in my Cutco training? That's what I live by. And he said, remind me of what that is. And I said, if you and Mom listen to me more often, I've told you this so many times, you'd be a lot happier. I said, it's okay to be negative when things go wrong, but not for more than 5 minutes. There's no value in dwelling on something that is now in the past, whether it's 5 minutes, 5 years, 5 decades. And my dad said, but Hal, you were taught that for much milder adversity, right? That was for no sales and rude customers and missing sales goals, not for never walking again. And I said, Dad, you're right. I was taught it for milder adversity, but the principle remains the same. I can't change that I was in the car accident, but I get to choose whether or not I resist it and wish it didn't happen and create emotional pain for myself, or I choose to accept it. And so unconditionally. And so for a year and a half, I had been reinforcing that mindset every day, whenever I'd have a disappointment or a no sale or whatever. And then I started using it in traffic, which for anybody listening, this is a great way to practice it every day. You know, think about how we usually hit traffic and we go, you know, if you leave the house late and then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm barely going to make it to the office. And then you hit traffic and you're like, no, not today. Like it's the traffic's fault that you left the house late. Like you put it's always putting the responsibility outside of ourselves. And what I realized is, you know, the first day when I started living by this 5-minute rule and the can't change it philosophy, I call it the can't change it philosophy, which is you just go, can't change it. And that reminds you, okay, I can't change the speed of the cars in front of me in the same way as I couldn't change that I was in a car accident, but I can choose to be happy and grateful in the midst of even the most difficult experience in my life. Traffic obviously is just
is the five minute rule anything like the 5-second rule?
You mean like Mel Robbins or like dropping something on the ground?
Bingo.
Yeah, then you can still eat it.
But that's true. 5 minutes, it does, because it's I drop something.
Get over it. Right.
I can no longer eat. I can't change it, so I might as well not feel bad about it. And literally, this is the key that unlocks the door to what I call emotional invincibility. When you live by the 5-minute rule or the can't change it philosophy, when you live in a state of unconditional acceptance of everything out of your control, you are emotionally invincible. And my wife will tell you it's hard to live with someone that's like that, because no matter what goes wrong, including when she tells me something's not going well, I'm like, well, we can't change it. Why? I don't want you to tell me you can't. I know we can't change it. I'm freaking pissed about it. And I want you to get pissed with me. I'm like, oh, I forgot. Let me be a good husband. That sucks, sweetheart. Damn it.
Yeah.
I wish we could change it. Son of a, yeah.
Hey, everybody. This is Gina Tremarco.
And Rachel Tipton.
And we are
Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the new podcast that does what?
Make sales sexy again.
What's this podcast about, Rachel?
It's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks. And it's filled with laughter, random chatter, practical advice, and some serious stuff.
It's not just for women, though, right?
No, it's a blend of best business practices and real life hacks for men and for women.
Listen to us on the Sell or Die Network,
womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, and anywhere that you can find podcasts. And
be sure to subscribe, comment, share our podcast, and give us a review. Tune in and listen to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again.
You've been warned.
So was your positive attitude when you were 20 contagious to your parents? I mean, it sounds like you were coaching them through your accident.
100%. And actually, most recently, you know, you mentioned in my bio. No, I was. And we just made a documentary called The Miracle Morning. So it's a documentary that goes beyond the book. And my parents are interviewed for the movie, and it was my mom or my dad said, when they're telling my accident story, they say, Hal led us through the whole thing. Like,
yeah,
Hal
cool.
was the one
That's cool.
that led us through. And a year and a half ago, when I was diagnosed with cancer, I was given a 30% chance of living, which for all of you pessimists, that's a 70% chance of dying, right? Not good odds. And I have the exact same mindset. I can't change that I have cancer. But I can choose, and so I'm going to accept the worst case scenario, which is me dying, which that sucks, but I'm not going to let it create fear for me. The only way to overcome fear, by the way, right, is acceptance. You know, you accept what could the worst case scenario, you fully accept it, you're at peace with it. And I said, I'm going to accept it, and I'm going to focus all my energy, kind of like walking again. It was the odds weren't good that I would walk again, but that reinforced for me the power of our mind and the mind-body connection. And I thought, I'm going to apply the same exact mindset to this cancer journey. And of course, you know, I was a year later, I was cancer free. I was one of those 30%.
Is it before your kids were born?
No, my daughter's 8. This was a year and a half ago. Yeah, my daughter was 7 and my son was 4. And I mean, I was my mom or not my mom. She loves when I call her my mom. My wife was mostly a single mom for a year, because I literally lived 6 months in the hospital or in an apartment near the hospital, which was in Houston, 3 hours away from our home in Austin. And, you know, they got to come a few times, but most of the time they had to be here to go to school and all of that. So my kids were without their dad for almost a year, a majority of a year. And my wife was without her husband for a majority of a year. And it was tough.
And how did they determine that your cancer was in remission?
So they do this thing called a bone marrow biopsy, which is the most painful, horrific. They stick a really thick needle.
All right.
You guys are squeamish. I should have caught that early.
No, we're not squeamish. We're exceptionally squeamish.
Yeah. You're what?
We're exceptionally squeamish.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right. So they stick a needle in and they into your bone and they have to suck out the bone marrow, which you had enjoyed at the restaurant at
exactly.
the Westin Hotel.
I was hoping it was not yours.
I sell my bone marrow to the Westin every time I get, no. So that they pull it out and then they test for cancer cells and leukemia cells in your bone marrow. And I have none as of the last test that I did.
So. Way to go.
Wow. That's cool. Cool. Way
that's
to go.
That's awesome.
Okay. So now it's
yes,
time
let's
for
do it.
Okay.
So Miracle Morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Miracle Morning is, well, here's what it is now. And then I might tell a little of the backstory, but it is, I wrote it as a book based on the 2008 economic crash. I crashed with it like so many people in America. I mean, I wasn't unique in that way. I was a coach. The majority of my income was as a sales coach. And over half of my clients, within a matter of a few months, quit coaching because they couldn't afford it. Because, you know, the trickle down right. of they weren't getting
they
sales.
Had a mortgage and, payment or a coach.
Right.
Exactly. And I'm a nice guy. And when they brought it to me, they're like, I know I'm in a 12-month contract, Hal, but here's my situation. And I'm like, I'm not going to hold you. I mean, yeah, you can go pay your mortgage, of course. And so I lost over half my income. And like most Americans, you know, I was living just below my means in terms of, you know, my income was whatever it was. I think it was $10,000 a month at that time or $8,000 a month. And I was, you know, my bills were $9,000 a month, right? So, I mean, there wasn't a lot left over. And all of a sudden, my income went down to like $4,700 a month within a few months. And I couldn't pay my mortgage. I lost my house. I got deeply depressed. And this six-month downward spiral kind of occurred where my body fat percentage tripled because I was buying cheap food. I had canceled my gym membership, mortgage payments. I fell behind. Bank took my house. And I got really depressed for the first time in my life because even though I applied the can't change it philosophy initially, I didn't know how to apply it to a downward spiral. Like first client I lost, all right, can't change it.
You can't change it, but you also can't pay for it.
It's like, I don't know. I mean, when there was no end in sight, it wasn't like a one-time occurrence. It was like things got worse and worse and worse and worse. And so my good friend, John Berghoff, who actually headed up Cutting Edge Sales, that book we did, John Berghoff, I reached out to him because I wasn't telling anybody because I was a success coach. You can imagine the identity crisis. Like I'm a success coach and I'm failing. What a fraud. Who am I? It was really hard on me. And so I called Berghoff, and long story short, the advice he gave me was you need to exercise every morning. I would go for a run because you need to get blood and oxygen to your brain and throughout your body. You need to put yourself in a peak physical, mental, and emotional state first thing in the morning so you can apply that peak state to your work and to solving your problems. And he said, while you're on that run, listen to a self-help or business audio, podcast, audiobook, whatever. And he said, and that way, while you're in the peak state, you're taking in the new information that you can run home and apply to your business. And I thought, okay, that makes sense. And on my very first run, I heard a quote from Jim Rohn that changed my entire life. And it is the catalyst for the Miracle Morning. I wish I got to thank Jim in person because he changed my life in this moment. And he said this, your level of success will seldom exceed your level of personal development. And I realized I am not dedicating time every day to my personal development. Therefore, I'm not becoming the person that I need to be to create the success that I want in my life. And I quantified it, right? So everybody listening and Jeff, you guys imagine, on a scale of 1 to 10, what level of success do we want in every area of our lives?
10.
10.
10. Nobody's like, I don't want to
be
too happy.
Yeah, I'll go for a 5, right?
I want a 9 and a half. No.
I don't want all my friends coming out of the woodworks for money. I just want like a 6 money, right? No, we want level 10, right? Human beings want to fulfill our potential, but very few do. And I realized here's the reason for that. I believe this is the reason. This is what disconnects people from living to their full potential. We all want level 10 success, but if our level of personal development, meaning our beliefs, our mindset, our habits, our knowledge, right? That's how I define personal development. It's all of that wrapped into one. If it's at a 2 or a 3 like mine was, right?
There's
well, that's
no way.
The disconnect.
Right. Yeah.
We want level 10, but we're a level 2. And the secret is you dedicate time every day to extraordinary personal development to become a level 10 person so you can create level 10 success in every single, I'm not just talking about in your business. I'm talking about every single area of your life, level 10 health, relationships, finances, energy, you name it. So I went home after I had that epiphany, which the first of two, I've got another one here in a sec. The first one was I've got to dedicate time to my personal development and I want it to be the most extraordinary personal development ritual known to man or woman. So I went home and I started Googling, what do millionaires do for personal development? What do CEOs do? What do the world's most successful people do? On and on. And I had a list of 6 practices. I was trying to figure out what the best one was. And the second epiphany was, what if I did all of these every single day? What if I woke up tomorrow and I did meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and journaling. The six most timeless, proven personal development practices in the history of humanity that virtually every successful person swears by at least one of them.
Okay, hold on. You know you're going to have to go into depth about each one, know, right? Like, whoa.
And I want to know why donuts are not in there. Don't you need donuts in the morning or you're...
Green smoothies, Jeffrey. I replace donuts with green smoothies.
See, you can have some of mine tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to go green
smoothies. He will not even try it.
Let me throw something at you, though, just before you continue on Miracle Morning. Everybody on the planet has a Jim Rohn quote.
Yeah.
Everybody. And they come about, I save them because I've had the privilege of meeting him several times and going to weekend seminars of his and sitting in the front row. But what you're living one of his quotes, which is all the information that you need to succeed already exists. The problem is you're not exposing yourself to it.
Mm, there you go.
And that's the kind of thing. All you did was make a conscious effort to expose.
Yep.
And you are still doing it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I've done the Miracle Morning on average of about 6 days a week for the last, 9 years now? 10 years, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, so talk to us about this ritual. Like what?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the six practices and the idea of doing them in the morning, you know, I say in the book, I have a whole chapter on customizing the Miracle Morning to fit your lifestyle. And I talk about you could do them any time of day, but here's the thing. People go, and people ask me sometimes in our Facebook group, the Miracle Morning community, they'll say, well, can't I do these in the afternoon and they're just as beneficial or in the evening? And I say, yes, you can. And they will change your life any time of day. However, you're missing out on the benefits that they give you starting with them in the morning. It's kind of like my buddy John said, you know, Hal, go for a run and put yourself in a peak physical, mental, and emotional state. And on that run, learn something. Well, you know, when you meditate in the morning or you exercise in the morning, it increases your energy, your ability to think, your clarity, your discipline. Why would you wait until the afternoon or evening, right? You've already missed the boat. You want to apply those first thing in the morning. And that's
I feel great. Now it's time to go to bed.
Exactly. I'm ready to kill it tomorrow. And then you wake up and just to give people a visual, something they can remember, these six practices are now an acronym, SAVERS. So write those down. I'll tell you what they are. So SAVERS. And I was writing the book one day in like 2009, I think, something like that, or 11. And my wife, I was frustrated. And she goes, what's going on? I said, everybody's got their system that's memorable. You know, Stephen Covey's got the 7 habits of highly effective people. Robert Kiyosaki's got the cash flow quadrant. I'm sorry that I can't rattle off yours, Jeffrey, but I'm sure you're memorable and everything. You're one of the best branding people. You taught me so much when I saw you in Sacramento. Little red book, little green book, little blue book, little black book, right on and on. But so they've got their memorable systems. I go, I've got these six practices that I didn't invent any of them. And there's no rhyme or reason or way to connect them. And she goes, why didn't you get a thesaurus and see if there's words that you could replace that would actually make an acronym that people could remember? I went, oh, you're freaking brilliant, you know? And so these became the savers, or I call them the lifesavers. And it couldn't be more appropriate because these are literally the six practices that are virtually guaranteed, and they've been proven for centuries, to save people from missing out on the life that they really want, the life of their full potential. So the first S is for silence, and that's meditation or prayer. The scientific research, I just read this article on medium.com the other day about, and it was backed by so much science around silence and how what that does for our creativity, taking times for, you know, peaceful, purposeful silence in the morning. You think about most people hit the snooze button in the morning. Here's the first problem with the lack of morning rituals. Most of us set the alarm for the last possible minute to wake up to not lose our job, have our kids taken away from us, get divorced, right? I call it a mediocre morning. You know, we literally look at our schedule and go, when's the last minute I could wake up and not get fired and not, you know? So that's the first problem. We hit the snooze button a few times, which that is literally resisting life itself. Think about that. The alarm goes off and you go, well, no, I know I say I want an extraordinary life, but not as bad as I want to lay unconscious for another 5 or 10 minutes, you know? It's like if we're really serious, we would wake up and use that time to become the person that we need to be, the level 10 person, to create the success we want in every area of our life. And that's what the Miracle Morning is. It's not waking up, just getting up early. It's waking up better, right? That's what it's about. So the first S is for silence, meditation, or prayer. The A is for affirmations. And affirmations have a bad rap by a lot of, you know, I think self-help gurus have taught them for decades. Two ways that don't work. Number one, lie to yourself. Number two, use this passive, flowery language that doesn't produce results. So an example,
I thought you were going to say lie to yourself and then lie to others. I thought that was...
No, I don't. No, I'm sure some gurus teach that. But so lying to yourself, right? So an example is this whole I am statement thing. If you want to become a millionaire, you want to become whatever, just act as if. Say I am a millionaire over and over and over until you believe it. Well, the problem is, if you're a smart person, every time you try to force it, I am a millionaire, your subconscious or your ego goes, no, you're not, right? You know, some of us, it's like, you're not even a thousandaire yet, dude. What are you talking? Who are you kidding, right? So lying to ourselves will never be the optimum strategy. The second strategy is this passive flowery language. I'll use an example of a money affirmation that has been perpetuated for as long as I can remember. I am a money magnet. Money flows to me effortlessly and in abundance.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Jeffrey, have you found that money flows to you effortlessly, or do you usually put forth effort to generate money?
Effort.
I don't know anybody who doesn't have to put
forth effort. I'll tell you something else. Having been in the sales world for so many years, hear the story of, well, this is going to create passive income for you.
I hate that.
And there is no such thing as passive income. It's either active income or it's no income. Because passive means you don't have to do anything to get it. Why don't you tell me how many times you've had no effort to get any of your money?
Yeah, it takes effort. And no, you're absolutely right. And the reason I think a lot of people like that affirmation, and again, that's a very popular affirmation. If you Google like best money affirmations, it's on almost every list, some variation of that. And here's why that actually affirmation is people like it, is it gives you temporary departure from your financial worries. So if you check your bank balance in the morning and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm negative again. You go, God, I need to go read my affirmations. Oh, money flows to me effortlessly and in abundance. I'm a money magnet. I attract it. Well, that feels good, right? If you believe the illusion, right? That feels good.
So but what's
the problem
an example
is, it's not going to get you money.
What's a good affirmation?
So four steps. The way that I'll give you four steps to create affirmations that will generate results for you. Number one is what you're committed to. So the what and what you're committed to. So you want to be a millionaire, that's great, but you're not a millionaire yet. Or if you want to lose 20 pounds, you haven't lost it yet. How about phrasing your affirmation, I am committed to becoming a millionaire. I am committed to becoming, and you could even add no matter what, by this day, you can really solidify that commitment. But you don't get what you want in life, as you know, you get what you're committed to.
You know, right? What I use, right?
What?
Even if your ass falls off.
Yeah.
There you go. You can use Jeffrey's affirmation formula and add, I am committed to becoming a millionaire even if my ass falls off.
Right.
Step number two for creating affirmations that produce results, why it's deeply meaningful to you, right? I wanted to be a millionaire when I was like 19 and 20, and I had a goal to do it by the time I was 25, and then at 25, I didn't do it. Then I was like, well, by the time I'm 30, and then at 30, I hadn't done it. And I'm like, what the hell's wrong? And then I had our first child, and then all of a sudden it was, I'm committed to becoming a millionaire because my family deserves for me as the provider to provide financial freedom for them and security. That got me up in the morning. That got me, you know, that got me, that was the deeply meaningful why that drove me to do whatever it took, even if my ass fell off, to reach that goal. Step number three is the how. How are you going to do that? So getting specific on which activities are not an idea, but are required. Like, what are the required activities? So if you're trying to lose 20 pounds, if that's your affirmation, because you want to have energy and be there for your family, or you want to look good in a bikini or whatever, right? Well, then, so therefore, in your affirmation, it should say, I will go to the gym 5 days a week, you know, right? No matter what, even if my ass falls off. And then step number four is, man, we're affirming that. It's ingraining it in my head, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. Now all my affirmations are going to have, if my ass falls off.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So and then step number four is, when are you committed to taking those actions? So it's, I will go to the gym 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., no matter what, right? So those are affirmations. They're not rooted in lies and trying to trick yourself. It's not using passive language that doesn't produce results. It's solidifying your commitment to a specific goal, reinforcing why it's deeply meaningful to you, and clarifying what specifically you must do and when you are committed to doing it to ensure that you achieve the result. That's my formula for affirmations, and I teach it and I use it every day in my own affirmations.
Cool.
Cool. All right, okay, what's the V?
Let's go through the other ones a little faster here. The V is for visualization. And the only thing I'll say on visualization is, again, putting self-help gurus under the bus. You know, that movie, The Secret, and a lot of the self-help gurus teach you make a vision board or visualize yourself crossing the finish line of the marathon or visualize yourself in the big house or whatever. Now, there is value to that. Don't get me wrong. When you visualize crossing the finish line of the marathon over and over again, you actually start to believe that it's possible because you've seen it so many times. Mm-hmm. That's valuable. But if you leave it at that, you're doing yourself a disservice and it's counterproductive because you trick your subconscious into thinking that that result is as good as done. Oh, yeah, I've seen it so many times. I know it's going to happen. And then you lose the drive to take the actions necessary to make it happen. So spend 30 to 60 seconds visualizing the end result, the house, the car, the family, the weight, your bikini body, you're crossing the finish line, whatever. But then spend more time, twice as much time, you know, a minute or two or three or five, visualizing yourself taking the action today.
Right.
That will get you.
I visualize running 7 miles in the morning every day.
Do you?
No, I do, but I don't. I run to the car though.
You don't run, or you do?
Yeah.
To get donuts.
Yeah. No. Donuts. Although
if you
this morning,
green smoothie first. Drink Jennifer's green smoothie, and then you could go on that run.
It's not green. It's like brown.
Well, that's because I put
it's
in.
Purple. It's
I
got
put
berries.
It is purple, right? That's right. Because I put in blueberries.
Jeffrey, you're like one of my little kids. I say, you guys, just because I put, you can't taste the spinach. It just makes a different color.
Would you
right?
like me to make it a different color for
I'm
you?
I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, get some food, some
it's
natural
a seller
food coloring.
Dye trend. He usually takes my cups, but not my smoothie drink.
No, I will have a bowl of cereal with fruit in it and feel whole
because
use whole milk.
We don't have enough time on the podcast for me to convince Jeffrey to change his whole
diet.
Yeah.
All right. E.
All right. The E is for exercise.
Wait a second. What do you when you visualize something?
Yeah.
You so what you're saying is you have to visualize the steps, not just the ending.
Yeah. So I'll give you a specific example of how one of the first ways that I actually did this right after. So when I started doing the Miracle Morning, and I had this distinction around. I want level 10 success in every area of my life. I have to become a level 10 person.
Mm-hmm.
Then I downloaded one of those Wheel of Life things to kind of measure where am I at on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I got clear, okay, I'm at a 4 in this area, I'm at an 8, 6 in this area, 7 in this area. And then I asked myself, what would a measurable result be that would be so out of my comfort zone that would scare me, but it was doable, that it would challenge me to become a level 10 person, right? And physically, I hated running. I had never run more than 1 mile in my life at a time, and that was only in PE class in high school when you had to run the mile, right? I mean, literally, hated running. And hated walking. I didn't like walking places. I thought, wait a minute. My friend founded a charity called Front Row Foundation. And they do this run every year. And of course I've never done it. And every year he invites me. I thought, what if I did a marathon? I don't even know the guy that I would have to become, the level 10 person, to run 26 miles in a day. And then after a few weeks of getting my head around that,
26.2.
There you go. Researching my, books on how to do it and all that. Then I went, wait a minute. Everybody does a marathon. Not everybody, but a lot of people do a marathon. I have two friends that have done ultra marathons, 52 miles in a day.
Yeah.
I thought, if they did it, I can do it. Total bullshit logic. Doesn't make any sense.
Correct.
But that was my, at the time, I was delusional. I thought, you know what? I'm going to do. So I thought, I'm going to commit publicly to my Miracle Morning community. Or no, I didn't have a Miracle Morning community, but just publicly on my Facebook and to the charity that I'm going to run 52 miles on this day to raise money for them. And so here's how visualization played into that. Every day, I literally downloaded a picture of the Atlantic City Marathon from Google Images, the finish line, so I could actually visualize the real spot that I would be crossing the finish line. Again, there's value to that because I started to believe I can do it. I've seen it. But the most important part of my daily visualization was I would close my eyes and I would see myself walking into my bedroom, looking at the clock at 7 a.m. because that's when I had committed the win. To run, Then I would see myself go in my closet, get dressed in my running clothes. Then I would visualize myself walking out of my house. This is like a 2-minute visualization. Walking out of my front door with a smile on my face. And I would literally generate the emotions inside of looking forward to that run. So let me pause for a second. The key is anything in your world that you want to use visualization for, that you want to accomplish, when you visualize yourself taking the daily activities, like making sales calls or whatever your activities are, right? See yourself enjoying the process or doing it with confidence or, you know, whatever, and then feel those emotions so that when it's time to do it, you've already gone there in your body. If there's a reason that the world's greatest athletes from when they were, you know, Tiger Woods when he was at the top of his game, or, you know, Michael Jordan, or, you know, today LeBron James or whatever, they visualize performing perfectly, right? And so then when they actually, and they go there emotionally in their body and their mind and their spirit. So when they get out on the court or on the field or whatever, they've already been there. And that's the same thing that you can take advantage of in your daily life. You get to the point, like I've gotten to the point where I don't actually, and I'm always transparent about this. Visualization is my weakest link. Like in the savers, it's the one that I struggle with the most for whatever reason. I don't even know why. So I actually don't do it every day. It's maybe the only saver that I don't do every day. I do it when I have something big, like if I'm giving a speech, I'll go into the room in the morning and I'll actually visualize, you know, and Jeffrey, you've probably done this, you know, but I'll stand on the stage and I'll visualize it full of people and I'll walk back and forth and visualize myself and I'll see people laughing in the front row, right? So I've gone there. And that way when I hit the stage, I'm a lot less nervous and because I've already gone there, you know? So yeah, to your point, Jeffrey, I don't do it every day.
You get nervous before you talk?
No. No, not really. Hey, in a healthy way, but not really.
Okay.
Wait, so did you complete the race?
Yeah, I did. And it was the hardest day of my life. And people go, what are you doing next? I'm like, burning my running shoes and never running again.
Exactly.
So wait, you went from almost never, like being told you may never walk again, to running 52 miles.
Yeah, that was part of why I did it too. So the first thing was raising money for charity. And then it was to become a level 10 person. And then I thought, wait a minute, a side benefit of this is, this is really a profound like example of you can do anything. Oh, you know, because how profound, like you just said it.
That is freaking cool.
Can't walk to 52 miles and yeah.
Yeah, I could do that, but it would only be in the car.
Yeah.
I can drive 60 miles in a car with my eyes closed because someone else is driving.
That's a long drive.
Yeah.
So no, you, it took me 6 months. You know, I ran 500 miles in the 6 months training up for it.
Wow.
So I averaged about 100 miles a month. And so I bought a book called The Non-Runner's Guide to Marathon Training. It was for like people that hate running. How do you train for a marathon? And so it helped with the psychology. So that was actually the book that really helped me get through it.
My statement has always been running doesn't help you live longer. It just seems longer.
Well, and I think running is proven hard on the knees. Like to me, it's not the best form of exercise if you're going to do something consistent.
All right. So exercise is the next one.
And here's what I'll say. Short is that it is, I'm not saying, you know, if you're listening, so if you don't exercise at all, this is very important. If you exercise in the afternoon or the evening, you go to the gym after work and you're going, well, I don't want to exercise in the morning. I go to the gym in the afternoon. It's my time. It's whatever. I go on my lunch break. You know, I'm not telling you this has to replace any exercise you do. I'm saying that the benefits of exercising in the morning for your physical, mental, and emotional capacities, right, the way that it expands all three of those is undeniable, scientifically proven. And so I'm talking about 60 seconds to, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. Like if you're tired in the morning, like on days when I don't, in fact, in the book, it's called the 6-minute miracle morning. And it's not designed to be your daily 6-minute ritual. It's for days when our society, we're conditioned, we often go all or nothing. Oh, I was going to go to the gym for an hour today. I've only got 40 more minutes. And by the time I get there, I'll be down to 30. I'll skip it today. It's this all or nothing mentality. And I had that with the miracle morning in the beginning. And then I realized it one day and I went, wait a minute. What if I did a 6-minute miracle? I've got like 15 minutes right now before I have to leave. What if I did 6 minutes, 1 minute for each of the savers? And I did 1 minute of meditation. Now, you can only go so deep, but I'll tell you, I calmed my body. I calmed my mind. I felt grounded. I pulled out my affirmations. It really only took a minute to read the affirmations that reaffirmed what I was committed to, why I was committed to it, what I needed to do, right? I mean, literally, I could read an affirmation in 10 seconds, you know? And I've got like eight of them for each area of my life, or 10 of them. So it took me a minute to read all of them, right? Then I did, you know, close my eyes, visualize the day. I did a 60 seconds of jumping jacks. And guess what? If you're feeling exhausted and you're falling asleep on the couch, do 60 seconds of jumping jacks and you're like, whoo! I mean, Jeffrey would die, but most people, you know.
Sorry, I would not die. Don't do the jumping jacks.
I would limp. I wouldn't actually die.
No. But yeah, so I'm talking about a short amount of exercise. And let me tell you my favorite app for exercise. It's called 7-Minute Workout. It's also a YouTube video that's free. It's a free app. It's a free YouTube video. It was written up in the New York Times as this scientifically proven 7-minute workout. And it's a full body workout, or almost full body, in 7 minutes. And it's only 30 seconds per exercise and then 10 seconds of rest. 12 exercises total.
Hitting that up tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I might even do that.
I have ADHD.
Can we get it down to six?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Seven's too long. The R is for reading. And I believe, and I think anybody would agree, we're all one self-help book away from the knowledge or the strategies we need to take any of our life to the next level, right? You want to improve your sales? You're one book away. It's called, you know, the Little Red Book of Selling, or whatever Jeffrey's latest, you know, book is. And I've read most of them. If you want to improve your marriage, you know, it's interesting. Most people, this is kind of my theory or philosophy here. If you were to ask most people that are getting a divorce, most couples, my parents got a divorce a few years back. I was very, very, you know, present to how the struggle of that after married for 30 years. But if you were to ask most people getting a divorce, how many books did you guys read on marriage in the last year? How many? What do you think most?
None.
Zero.
None. Right. I go, so wait, you want a level 10 marriage, but your knowledge around creating a level 10 marriage is like at a one or a zero.
Right. It's like you want a great attitude, but you never read a book
right.
on it.
Yeah. And so it's like if you had read even one book on having an amazing marriage, you'd have so many more distinctions and strategies and knowledge and how to communicate it. Right. But if you read, you know, three books or five books or six books, you'd be a marriage master.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I do believe that incompatibility is a real thing. You know, so I'm not saying that it's the end all be all. But the point is, right, it's like any area of our life. You know, Joe Polish said in the Miracle Morning movie, we interviewed Joe Polish, and he said, he goes, the fact that there are people in societies where they have access to books and they know how to read and they are not reading books on improving their lives or themselves. He's like, it blows my mind. Mm-hmm.
Who live in New York City and don't go to a Broadway show.
You took the words out of my mouth, Jeffrey. It is. I mean, it's
you know, it's there. You just don't take advantage of it.
You're not taking advantage of it, and it can improve your life and enhance it dramatically. And I'm not talking about like Harry Potter or 50 Shades of Grey, like not those kind of books, you know,
right.
The books that improve your life. And then the final S is for a word that was not part of my vocabulary before my wife's suggestion of the thesaurus. And that word is scribing. Scribing, which is a fancy word for writing or journaling. Jim Rohn, obviously a huge proponent of journaling. Yep. It forces you to articulate your thoughts, clarify them to the point of putting them in writing so they make sense, they are organized, there's a record of them. Every morning I use the 5-minute journal. It's a physical journal, but it's also an app. I use the app. And I like the app because I'm visual and I can put a picture. So every day there's like yesterday was my wife and I's 26th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
Of course, I've got a picture of us at dinner. Aww. You know what I mean? So every day I've got a picture and then I write down what I'm grateful for, what I'm committed to doing that day. It's a really simple, short journal. And I want to wrap up all the savers with this. Robert Kiyosaki, who is, you know, he wrote the number one personal finance book of all time, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And Robert, he reached out to me, or his assistant did, and said, Robert has read The Miracle Morning 3 times, and it has changed his life. He and his wife do it together every day, and he would like to interview you on Rich Dad Radio. So as a huge fan of his, after my jaw kind of dropped off the floor, I'm like, what? You know, and I did a little Googling. I'm like, I've got to know, like, what's Robert? I Googled, like, his net worth and how many books he sold. I just kind of was curious about this stuff. And I was like, wow, he's, you know, back then, I don't know what he is now, but it was like an $80 million net worth is what it said online. And he sold 26 million copies of Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I'm going, okay, wait a minute. I wrote this book when I was at rock bottom, or not wrote the book, but I came with a routine at rock bottom. I wrote it to share it with other people. Robert is not at rock bottom. He's worth $80 million and he's 70 years old. I don't think he's looking for a self-help book. So, but he's always growing and improving to this day. And I thought this is universally applicable. The Miracle Morning, if it could transform Robert Kiyosaki's life, you know, at his level of success and mine at zero, it's totally, you know, or if you're anywhere in between 80 million and zero, right, it applies to you. And
that's so most that people, that's most people that, that by the way, Alan.
I think that probably hits most people.
Yeah. Wow.
So here's the last thing I want to say on the Savers is this, what Robert said during our interview, he said, because I couldn't say it better. He said, Hal, every single successful person on the planet, he said, I would venture to say they practice and swear by at least one of the Savers. They would attribute their success to at least one. Many people, it's exercise. Many, it's meditation. Many, it's, you know, reading, right? He said, but I have never heard of anyone that was doing all six of the most timeless practices, you know, ancient wisdom practices known to man. And he said, that's what makes the Miracle Morning so life-changing and so quickly. It accelerates your personal development so fast. He said, and that's why I do all six of the Savers every single day, because it's such a profound, you know, the results you see in your life, you know, so quickly.
That was an amazing interview.
That was unbelievable. Where the hell was it? It was in the archives, but iTunes forgot to leave it up, and now it's up, and now, but where should our diehards go right now?
All right, if you want more, go to Facebook and search for the Seller Diehards official Facebook group, or if you really want to get involved in the community, you can go to 2020 salesvision.com and sign up for the waitlist to get into the 2020 Sales Vision group.
And speaking of 20, your investment will be 20 bucks.
That's right. It's 20 bucks a month. 20 bucks a month.
Live answers, interactions. It's unbelievable. Go there, do it now.
It is so much fun. I love it. All right, guys. Peace out. Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true Sell or Diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.